Hello, everyone. We will continue in our Bible study through the book of Psalms. And now we come to Psalms 15. I thought this was interesting. When you study the history of the United States of America and probably of Canada and other countries, the founders of those countries were very interested in the Bible and well-versed in the Bible. Look at what Thomas Jefferson said about Psalms 15. Thomas Jefferson called this psalm the picture of a true gentleman. That means he was familiar with this psalm. Thomas Jefferson made that comment about Psalms 15. Let's read it. Verse 1. Lord, who shall abide in your tabernacle? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? Who do you love? Who do you care for? Who will you protect and prosper and bless? Who can get close to you and you get close to them, man or woman? Who do you watch over? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? Here's who. Verse 2, Psalms 15. He that walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. Speaks the truth in his heart. You know, the heart is the source of praise and truth. The mouth is the instrument in which it's expressed, but it starts in the mind. It starts in the heart. Who shall dwell in your holy hill? He that backbites not with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his neighbor. If you study verse 3 of Psalms 15, it's talking about gossip. It's talking about undercutting others, talking to their back, passing along false information, hurting with words of slander and lies and falsehoods. Who's going to dwell in his holy hill? He that walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He that backbites not with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his neighbor. Verse 4, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned or despised, but he honors them that fear the eternal. He that swears to his own hurt and changes not. In other words, committed his word and committed his agreement in such and such a situation, and then it turns out not too good for him, but he stands by his word. He stands by his word. He doesn't change the agreement and back out of the deal just because it didn't work out too well for him. Verse 5, he that puts not out his money to usury, interest, nor takes reward against the innocent, he that does these things shall never be moved. You know, one of the greatest changes in the kingdom of God is going to be in the economics of that time, and one of the greatest changes in business practices and the economy is going to be abolishing all interest rates. No more interest rates leveled at people. It's just incredible how our nation and other nations are so wrapped up in the practice of charging interest, and unjustly and unfairly so, just gouging away at people's money and at people's finances, whether it be via credit card or hidden charges in various financial dealings or loans or whatever. Well, the time is coming when usury will be a thing of the past. It says right here, he that puts not out his money to usury will dwell in his holy hill. Now, I realize in today's society, there are certain situations where in business, interest is a part of it. But it's not what people who want to serve God practice, especially with other people who serve God. And even with people who are not in the church, a person needs to be careful about usury and about charging interest. It says right here, that's not something that's going to happen when God's tabernacle is established on this earth. It's going to be wiped out, and it's not going to be a practice that's going to be perpetuated at all. Fairness. If you owe somebody something, you pay him back. If you lend somebody some money, you expect him to pay it back. But you don't level a big interest rate in order to gouge him, and if he can't pay it back, come and take something of his. That's not God's way of dealing between brethren, and it's not God's way of dealing as far as business practices in general. Okay, now we come to Psalm 16. Psalm 16 and verse 1. Preserve me, O God, for in thee do I put my trust. David just outright said, please preserve me. Please take care of me. I'm trusting you. Psalm 16 and verse 2. This is from the New King James Version. O my soul, you have said to the Lord, you are my Lord. My goodness is nothing apart from you. See, in the Authorized King James, it says, O my soul, you have said unto the Lord, you are my Lord. My goodness extends not to you. But that's not the right translation. The right translation is, my goodness is nothing apart from you. That's one translation that nails it. And the one I just read, my goodness is nothing apart from you. That's in the New King James, and other translations say the same thing. So that's a better way of understanding verse 2, a better translation of Psalm 16 and verse 2. Now verse 3, but to the saints that are in the earth and to the excellent in whom is all my delight. Let's see, O my soul, you have said unto the Lord, you are my Lord. My goodness is nothing apart from you. But to the saints that are in the earth and to the excellent in whom is all my delight. That's who we want to be connected to, and that's who God pays attention to. The saints, his called out, special, chosen, holy people, called early and expected to carry out their calling involving the twofold commission and involving training to be kings and priests in the kingdom. Their sorrow shall be multiplied and hastens after another God. Their drink offerings of blood will I not offer, nor take up their names into my lips. You know, when we look to other religions and we get involved in pagan practices, that's all covered right here in verse 4. Their sorrow shall be multiplied and hasten after another God. And paganism today in this world is held at a premium. Just think about all of the pagan practices that are accepted as normal, and those practices are entered into with great glee and joy. And from generation to generation, those pagan godless practices are passed along. And it involves religious practices, it involves holidays that are based on paganism. It just is widespread. Well, God says, their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another God. We are to worship God in spirit and in truth. We're to keep his holy days. We're to be a part of his way of life. Otherwise, sorrows will be multiplied. Verse 5, the Lord is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. The lines are fallen unto me. The measure and the blessings and the inheritance, the rule, all of that's involved in the word lines. The lines are fallen unto me in pleasant places. Yea, I have a goodly heritage or inheritance. I will bless the Eternal who has given me counsel. My reins, my heart also instructs me in the night seasons. David would wake up at night, and instead of tossing and turning and pacing and being restless, he'd begin to think of God and his way and his truth and his word and how wonderful it is to practice the laws that God has put in place between husbands and wives and parents and children and children and children and neighbors and fellow Christians, and how wonderful it is to contemplate God's law being in place so that throughout the world, people are living according to the Ten Commandments, and how wonderful it is to think about the holy days and what they picture and the plan of salvation, and each one is so filled with joy and happiness. Now, the Passover is very serious, but there's also some joy involved in that. Christ said, if you wash one another's feet, this is part of the joy of serving that I want you to learn. So in the night seasons, when we wake up, instead of being restless and tossing and turning, we can start directing our thoughts and our prayers toward God and his way, and we can relax. And then before you know it, we're going to be back in a deep sleep. I have set the Lord always before me because he is at my right hand. I shall not be moved. Why does it say at my right hand? Well, the right hand is the position of a defender. If you look into any kind of trouble where, let's say, David's armor bearer was defending him, or David was an armor bearer, the defender is at the right hand. It frees up him to wield his weapon and so on. And so it's a phrase that has to do with being protected and defended, and it ties in with security. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. I'm secure. He's there with me. He's protecting me. He's for me. I can count on him. Therefore, my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh also shall rest in hope, not in worry, not in anxiety, but in hope. For you will not leave my soul in hell, in trouble, and in the grave. No, neither will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. You see how the meaning shifts to include Jesus Christ now. There's a duality here. David knew he was going to be resurrected, but the main meaning now in verse 10 is Jesus Christ and how he died, but the Father resurrected him after 3 days and three nights. It says, the Holy One, your Holy One, for you will not leave my soul in the grave, neither will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. He took care of Jesus Christ, God the Father did. Now, verse 11. You know, sometimes in the scriptures, you'll come upon a verse that is just, it's a diamond, it's a gold nugget, it's a pearl, it's one you want to go back and read often. Well, here's one right here in Psalm 16, verse 11. You will show me the path of life. I'm not going to be wandering through a jungle or through a dense forest, not knowing which way to go and what to do. It's going to be a clear path. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get on track. We're trying to get right back on that path that God established through Herbert and Loma Armstrong. We don't have to blaze a new path. We just want to get on that path and clean that off where it's been grown over and reestablish the clarity of that path as we head on toward the kingdom of God, doing the work all along the way. You will show me the path of life. In your presence, when I'm close to you, when I'm walking with you and you're close to me, and it's a close relationship that we have, in your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. That's what happens when we draw close to God and we yield to God and we want to do what he says and we want to become like Jesus Christ. This is what takes place to every man, woman, and child that does this, and to every home where the family's doing it. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. Worry's gone. Anger's gone. Guilt is gone. Being full of all kinds of retaliatory ideas and getting even and being negative and sarcastic, that's all gone. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. What a wonderful verse. We will go ahead now with chapter 17. There's so many great things in chapter 17. Verse 1. Hear the right, O Lord, attend unto my cry. Give ear unto my prayer that goes not out of feigned lips. Give ear unto my prayer. You know, for God to give ear to our prayer, we've got to be offering it up. And when we do, he hears. Let my sentence come forth from your presence. Let your eyes behold the things that are equal. You have proved my heart. You have visited me in the night. You have tried me and shall find nothing. I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress. Help me in this, Father. I've decided I'm not going to sin with my mouth. I'm going to be careful with what I say and when I say it. Help me with that. Concerning the works of men, by the word of thy lips, I have kept me from the paths of the destroyer. I've paid attention, and by the word of your lips, by your words, I followed them, and I've gone away from the paths of the destroyer. Hold up my goings in your paths, that my footsteps slip not. I don't want to fall, but I don't want to slip either. I want to be strong and sturdy and steady and on solid footing, spiritually and in every other way. Establish me that I slip not. I've called upon you, for you will hear me. O God, incline your ear unto me and hear my speech. And I know you care, and I know you will hear, and I know you will answer, so I'm going to keep on calling upon you. Show your marvelous loving kindness, O thou that savest by your right hand, them which put their trust in you from those that rise up against them. Protect them. Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me under the shadow of your wings. Isn't that tremendous? Verse 8 of Psalm 17. Keep me as the apple of the eye. Hide me under the shadow of thy wings. You know, the Hebrew word for apple here is pupil. So why does he say, keep me as the pupil of the eye? Well, that's because the pupil is the most tender part of the eye, and it has the most protection, the most care, and the most attention. It's the most delicate, the most tender. So it's the prize and the most important part of the eye. And he's saying here, keep me as the apple of the eye. Protect me, look after me, care for me. Pay special attention to your chosen one, which we are. Not because we're great, but because God is merciful and he's chosen us as his people to carry out the responsibilities he's given us. And he will keep us as the apple of the eye. He will hide us under the shadow of his wings, like a mother gathering her chicks under her wings. It's a wonderful thing to see. Have you ever seen that, where there's trouble and a mother hen's got these little chicks running around and she'll start clucking and they'll run for her and they'll just gather under her wings? And if you didn't know any better, you'd think, well, there's just a chicken out in the yard. You wouldn't know her little, we call them biddies, her little babies are under those wings. Well, God will protect us that way. That's the metaphor here. Verse 9, from the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies who compass me about, they are enclosed in their own fat. With their mouth they speak proudly. Enclosed in their own fat, meaning their own possessions and all of their things that they look to for security. And that's not security at all. They have now compassed us in our steps. They have set their eyes bowing down to the earth, crouching down like an animal about to pounce on its prey, like as a lion that is greedy of his prey, and as it were a young lion lurking in secret places. One translation says, like as a lion that is eager to tear. That's right. An animal wanting to pounce on another animal and rip it to shreds. Well, that's the way human beings are. Let's face it. They really are that way. Evil, violent human beings are that way toward others, and it doesn't matter what age they are. Well, God will protect us from that, and he will guide us in paths away from those wrong ways. Arise, O Lord, disappoint him. Confront him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked, which is your sword, or with your sword, or with your intervention, or whatever power you need to use in order to do that. From men which are your hand, O Lord, from men of the world. Really a better translation. From men with your hand, O Lord, from men of the world, which have their portion in this life, and whose belly thou fillest with your hid treasure, they are full of children and leave the rest of their substance to their babes. In other words, life has been set in motion, so there are wicked men and there are evil men who figure out a way to acquire things and to fill their bellies and to have children and give them substance. That's out there in this life. But it's passing pleasure. It's passing acquisition of things. It won't last. It will be destroyed. They will lose it. They are going to be punished. But when we serve God and we obey him, the pleasures that he gives us are forevermore, as we've already read. And there's the big difference. And notice this in verse 15. Now, verse 15 tells us that David, the patriarch and the prophet, knew about the resurrection. He knew about the purpose in life. He knew about the plan of God and that God was reproducing himself. Yes, David knew this. Just look at this right here in Psalm 17, verse 15. As for me, I will behold your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with your likeness. I'm looking forward to the time that I'm going to be resurrected, David said, and I'm going to be like you. I will look like you. I will have your appearance. I will be your son. I will be in your family. That's why I was born. That's why everybody's been born. One of these days, we're going to be born again into your family. We're going to be resurrected, and we're going to be made out of spirit the way you're made out of spirit, and we're going to look like you. That's what John said. When Christ comes again, we will be like him. And David knew that. When I awake, I'll be like you. As for me, he said, verse 15, I will behold your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with your likeness. So we'll stop there and pick it up at the next Bible study with Psalms chapter 18 as we continue this Bible study through the book of Psalms. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.